Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Get in touch with technology with Tech Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey there, and welcome to Tech Stuff. I'm Jonathan Strickland, and joining me in the studio, a true celebrity, man among men, Josh Clark. Stuff you should know.
Hey, Strickland.
Hey, Josh, how you doing?
I want to apologize in advance. I'm not feeling very charming today.
It's okay, Josh. It's all right. I mean, because Josh at a 3 is like a normal human at like an 8.2.
Oh, go on. That was nice.
I gave Josh, of course, the opportunity to pick a topic for, something that we could cover here on Tech Stuff. And we were just kind of bandying about ideas. And you actually came up with one of the most basic pieces of technology that we're all familiar with, we've all used, but I have somehow never covered it in the nearly 700 episodes of Tech Stuff.
I'll bet you've covered them before.
Oh, yeah, just not on the show. 699 episodes. This is episode 699.
Awesome. I feel very honored to be on this one.
So,
this is nice.
Yeah.
Man, congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. Wow. Yeah. So we are talking about toilets today. Yeah, it's gonna be this episode's gonna be flush with puns.
Man, I can't take this already.
I know, it's bad already, right? So before I really get into that, there will obviously be some levity in this, but this is actually a very serious topic. And to kind of illustrate that, I wanted to mention something else. Now, this is half a year away from us, but November 19th is World Toilet Day, which at first sounds kind of comedic, right?
I think it's hilarious.
It sounds funny. It's an event hosted by the World Toilet Organization. Still sounds at first when you think about it, because toilet humor has become like a real industry unto itself. But this is not about humor. It's actually the purpose of the day and the purpose of the organization is to help provide support for getting proper sanitation to the world's population.
Oh, yeah.
According to that organization, 15% of the world's population still practices open defecation.
Oh, really?
That's a billion people.
I mean, I knew a lot of people did. I didn't realize it was that high of a percentage.
Now, I saw a figure back in, I think, 2009 that was 2.5 billion people. So clearly, we've made some great strides in raising sanitation levels, but there's still so much work to be done. And, right. I mean, this is obviously something that we have to be concerned with because it can lead to, you know, pandemics or at least a really bad outbreak of disease.
And, sure.
Not to mention just unpleasant living conditions.
Well, so. You know, what's funny is I think part of it also is not just that people practice open defecation, but that a lot of them don't have access to sanitary drinking water
right.
as a result of their waste disposal. But there are places, especially in parts of rural India, where open defecation is practiced, where the people are like, you can put toilets in here all day long. We're not going to use them because we find open defecation as part of like wholesome country living is the way that I've seen it put.
Mm.
Like it's just part and parcel with being outside and, you know, watching a squirrel run past you while you're pooping, that kind of thing. And really taking in the whole scene.
It's a cultural thing at that point. Yeah. It goes beyond like it's not necessarily just the lack of facilities.
Mm-hmm.
It's this has become a way of life.
Right.
I could understand that. I mean, I know there was even some reluctance in Japan to go from the more trough-like toilets that they used to have.
Oh, those are still there.
Yeah, there's a much smaller percentage of the toilets in Japan are those, but they
mm-hmm.
still do exist.
Sure.
But there was a large, I hesitate to use the word movement, trend to going toward more Western-style toilets over the last couple of years. I know, I'm sorry, it's going to happen. Chris Paulette is only here in spirit, but he is here.
No, you're channeling him pretty hard.
Yeah. So let's go with a little history lesson before we get into how toilets actually work. Now, if you're looking for the earliest evidence of organized waste management systems,
uh-huh.
you look at Mesopotamia.
Which makes sense because that's where the original civilizations were.
Yeah. Yeah, it's also a great B-52 song. But this would be back at the 3500 BCE, approximately around that era when you would see these organized systems for waste management. One thing I thought was really interesting was I watched a documentary about a Neolithic village
mm-hmm.
that was on the Orkney Islands in Scotland.
Uh-huh.
We call it Scarabray. That's the name we've given it because any actual records of this village haven't existed for more than a couple thousand years.
Right.
This village was forgotten. No one knew it was even there until there was a major storm that washed away some of the land that had grown up, built up around on top of the village.
That is so cool.
It is amazing, right? When it was discovered, you immediately had it was an expedition, let's say, to uncover the village, but it was not led by anyone who's ever been actually identified. In other words, it was treasure hunters.
Oh, gotcha.
Probably didn't find anything really of value there. There was certainly no, you know, hoards of gold and diamonds and jewels there. And it wouldn't be until the 1930s that a more organized archaeological dig would take place.
Right.
And after that, there was another storm, and they had to actually shore up the area to protect it as an archaeological site. And what they found was that this tiny village, which dates to around 3000 BCE in
mm-hmm.
Scotland,
mm-hmm.
had these homes that were very sophisticated. You would walk in, there'd be a large bed on the right-hand side, a smaller bed on the left, which
mm-hmm.
mirrors regular practices of the time where the husband and wife, the husband would have the larger of two beds.
Mm-hmm.
They had a fire pit, a hearth, but they also had essentially a toilet. They had a stone cabinet with a hole cut so that you could sit down on it with channels that led out to the ocean, and ocean water with the tides would actually flush
Smart.
This. So these were flushing toilets. They
yeah.
they weren't manual flush. You tidal flush, so you had to wait.
Hey, it's still flushed.
Yeah.
That's the important point in this.
Took the waste away.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So all the way back to 3000 BC, the whole area of Scarabray is fascinating. So
mm-hmm.
definitely look into that if you get a chance.
I mean, I've seen it before. I've seen just the settlement, pictures
yeah.
of the settlement. And it is pretty advanced. You don't think of the Orkney Islands in 3000 BCE as, you know, the seat of civilization or technology, but they had something going on
there.
It's
pretty surprising. Yeah, because, I mean, you know, when I think of society, civilization in the British Islands, I'm thinking closer to the Roman times, but it's pretty amazing how sophisticated it was even back then. Ancient Greeks also, they used sewage systems to channel waste away from living quarters. Mm-hmm. The Romans went even further. Mm-hmm. They would have these, especially if you were a very wealthy or powerful Roman, you might have a pretty styling, you know, bathroom.
Yeah. With heated seats.
Heated seats.
Heated marble seats.
Yeah.
And it may be private from what I understood, but for the most part, public bathrooms really took the public thing to the nth degree.
Yep.
Where it was just like basically a long bench with different cutouts, you know, spaced not very far apart, frankly.
Right.
And you'd have maybe 8 or 10, maybe 15.
Yeah.
I saw there was a public restroom in Syria. That I think was contemporaneous to Greece.
Yeah.
That sat like 80.
Right.
And there's no partitions. There's no nothing. And
yep.
It seemed to be, kind of a social endeavor where like you just sit there and chat with somebody while you're pooping.
Yeah. It's kind of funny to think about how it was this communal social activity.
Right.
Or at least it wasn't separated from any of the communal and social activities.
Right.
Whereas today, we have all these unspoken rules of you know, no talking in the bathroom.
You keep your dirty behavior to yourself.
Yeah. I don't know if you've ever seen it. There's actually a Machinima cartoon using the, I think it's The Sims, where it's to illustrate the rules in the men's restroom.
Mm-hmm.
And rule number one is if there's a line of urinals, you take one on either end. It doesn't matter which end, just it has to be on the end.
Okay.
The next person in has to take the one on the furthest end.
Mm-hmm.
And then as long as there's at least one empty one separating you and the next person, you can take one. But if there isn't, you gotta leave. Like there it was this crazy series of, but it was a series of rules where, and the comedy came from the fact that you're like, this is kind of how guys behave in the bathroom.
Yeah. For me, it's the cardinal rule is if there's two stalls.
Right.
And the door is shut on one, then both are occupied by default.
That must make it difficult here in this office because the bathrooms go floor to ceiling with the doors and they're shut all the time.
So that's different. Like these bathrooms are prime real estate, in my opinion. But if you'll remember in the last place where House Stuff Works was headquartered, it was, you know, just a partition and you could see feet and everything.
Yep.
And that's just, to me, like we really have advanced to the point where, you know, it is a private act.
Yes.
And it's not to be shared. It's not public. We're not in ancient Greece any longer.
Right.
And so if somebody's in a stall, you don't sit down next to them. I just really feel strongly about that.
I can understand. And it's interesting because when we get into advanced toilets, like the Japanese toilets, they take that to the next level to create another level of privacy for that.
It's pretty neat. Like you swipe your hand in front of a sensor and it takes you to the seventh dimension.
So
you're
right.
Completely
exactly.
Out of reach of anybody here.
It's you and Buckaroo Banzai and that's it.
Well, he's in the ninth, isn't he?
Yeah, I think he is. Or the tenth. It's one of those. Yeah. One of the other things we can talk about before we move into the earliest flush toilet is that when you're looking at, say, Europe in the Middle Ages all the way up into the Renaissance, you're talking about, especially like, for, you know, think about castles.
I do very frequently.
I really do frequently think about castles. Their facilities were pretty primitive. It was essentially a hole cut into a stone seat. Sometimes with a wooden panel on top of it, that then had a channel that slanted away from the wall, and your waste would drop down either into a cesspit, a moat, sometimes just the ground
onto invading armies.
That is also a possibility. And these were called garter robes, and they were also closets. They weren't just bathrooms; they were closets. You would hang your clothing.
Why?
Because the ammonia from your urine would kill fleas.
Oh, wow. That is very surprisingly clever.
Yeah.
It's not Scarabray clever, but it's up there.
So if you're wondering when the first flush toilet comes along, it's actually a lot earlier than I had anticipated. It's weird. I don't know how I never came across this fact before. And it's one that, by the way, a lot of people in our office know. It comes from 1596.
Yeah.
John Harrington.
Yes, who was a cousin, I think, of Elizabeth the First.
Yeah, he was her godson.
Okay, that's what it was.
Yeah.
And he designed this flushing toilet or prototype of a flushing toilet for her.
Yeah, and she probably didn't use it very much.
She didn't admit to it.
She was a queen, and technically when you're queen, you can pretty much poop wherever you like. And right. Someone's going to take care of it.
Oh, I'm sure.
But he called it the Ajax. Now, here's the thing. John Harrington was a rake.
Oh, yeah?
He was...
Like Greg Kinnear level rake?
You know, kind of. Like, he was known for passing around lewd poetry to the ladies of the court. He loved to... He was very clever, and he loved being clever.
And so, lewd poetry,
yeah.
Flushing toilots.
Well,
this guy sounds clever out the yin-yang.
He called it the Ajax as a pun.
Uh-huh.
It's a pun on the term jakes, which is a euphemism for toilet. It's like the John. It's Jakes.
Yep.
So Ajax is a pun on Jakes. And it had a pan into which one would do one's business.
Mm-hmm.
And a cistern that you could pump water up into.
Mm-hmm.
And then a handle. And when you pulled the handle, it opened up a valve that allowed the water from the cistern to come down and wash away what was in the pan down through a channel that would go out to a cesspool.
Onto an invading army.
Or onto an invading army, as the case may be. As far as I know, he only built two. I think he built one for the queen and one for himself.
Mm-hmm.
So it was an interesting idea. Did not catch on at the time. Really just showed his inventiveness. To look at the next approach to the flushing toilet, you have to go ahead by almost 200 years.
Right.
To 1775.
Yep. Alexander Cummings.
Exactly. And he invented something that ended up being very important for the flushing toilet, the S-trap.
Yeah, so much so that it's still basically the design of toilets today.
Yeah, now this is the pipes that you see that lead out from your toilet, mm-hmm. and it's called an S-trap because it's in that S shape, right?
Yeah, or some people consider it an upside-down U or something like that.
It all depends on, one, how much of it you can see, and
right.
two, exactly what implementation it is. But yeah, the U-trap is another way of looking at an upside-down U.
Mm-hmm.
So the important thing about this was that it would allow, it would trap water once it had gone down the pipe from coming back up, and it
right.
would also thus trap the smell.
Yes, which is very important with sewers. Because
yeah.
if you're taking a piece of technology and connecting it to an open sewer,
yeah.
the smell's going to be something.
Yeah, it's going
to
be.
You need to figure out how to take care of that. And he did with the S-trap.
Yeah, and it was really a brilliant idea. It also,
so much so, Strickland, that like 200 years later, 250 years later,
yeah.
We're still using this guy's design.
Yeah.
It has not been improved upon in 250 years.
Right. There are a couple of other variations on it, but the basic design is still what we rely upon because it works. It has no moving parts
right.
for just that pipe. So it can't break down in that sense. It could still get clogged. And maybe we'll talk a bit about clogs later. Yeah, well, you know, you got to talk about it.
I did not know we were going to talk about clogs.
Well, I apologize. If you want, you can check out for that part of the
okay.
episode.
I'll go to my happy place.
That's good. Yeah, we'll just watch you kind of stare off into space. But it also, he also invented a sliding valve between the bowl and the trap, which allowed some water to stay in the bowl mm-hmm. after you flushed so that it could hold on to the waste for the next time. And so you didn't just have just an empty bowl of waste.
Right.
And then put water into it. It
right.
was, you know, it actually improved the performance quite a bit. And you had a lot of other inventors who followed, like Samuel Prosser, Joseph Bramah, Thomas Twyford, they all made improvements to the basic design of the toilet.
But not a Mr. Crapper.
You know, I was going to save that, but yeah, let's talk about Thomas Crapper here
okay.
for a second. But before we get into that, let's take a quick break to thank our sponsor.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI. And Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI and revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, so you may have heard the somewhat apocryphal tale that the toilet was invented by a man named Thomas Crapper.
Yes, appropriately enough.
Yeah, one of those, ha-ha, isn't it ironic, don't you think, Alanis Morissette moments.
Right.
You know?
I think it's in that song,
it
isn't
might
it?
Be. It's like rain on your wedding day. It's like Thomas Crapper making a toilet.
Right.
I'm pretty sure that's the way it goes.
Yeah.
Thomas Crapper, as far as we can tell, was actually a person.
Mm-hmm.
There are records of a Thomas Crapper who held patents in the 19th century, and they're plumbing patents. And some of them, in fact, involve improvements to the water closet or toilet.
Mm-hmm.
But he didn't invent it, and he may not have had that big of an impact overall on the toilet evolution. It's just one of those facts that kind of got passed around as, you know, or one of those tidbits that gets passed around
right.
as the total truth.
Yeah. Plus, he pronounced his name Crapper.
It's Crapper.
Right.
Beard Fosse. Yeah, it was, it's one of those things where I actually looked into it too, because I was like, well, I've always heard that as well. And I'm curious where that came from.
Well, yeah, it is. It has traction because it's just so delightful.
Yeah. Yeah. Going back to mid-1800s, 1848, in the UK, that's when they passed the Public Health Act, which stated that all new houses in the UK had to be built with a toilet.
Very smart.
Yeah. It's a great way of preserving your various towns and cities from becoming overrun with filth.
Right. But, and this is still in play today, there's a certain psychology around defecation, urination, expelling waste, right?
Yeah.
And it can swing wildly from era to era.
Sure.
But at that time, in the mid-19th century, forcing the public to install indoor plumbing wasn't like the public was saying, yes, thank you, government. We've been waiting to have to do this. Mm-hmm. It was more like, wait, you want us to put a toilet where? Next to the kitchen?
Yeah.
What is wrong with you? No, yeah. That's disgusting.
We want to put this over in the back garden where,
right.
You know,
or, you know, in a chamber pot that's mobile that we can put wherever and get rid of immediately. Like, this is gross. Like, yeah. You want us to hook it up to the sewer? What's wrong with you?
Right.
So there was like a certain amount of resistance to adopting this.
Yeah.
Whereas now, you know, it's, yeah, you want that. You want indoor plumbing.
No.
It's based on the cultural attitudes toward expelling waste that vary from time to time.
Yeah, it's hard. I mean, it's very easy for us to start looking at everything from our current perspective, right? It's very difficult to take ourselves out of that. But you do have to do that when you start talking about subjects like this, because it was a different world. I mean, people thought differently, and for reasons that you can kind of understand when you think about it.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you think, well, now I've got a thing that dumps waste into a sewer, but I don't want any of that smell or nastiness or anything to get into my home.
Mm-hmm.
When before I had a portable thing, I could actually take it outside and dump it in a cesspool or whatever. It was a big change.
Plus, it's like, that's my poop. Yeah, it's poop, but I know where that poop came from.
Right.
Whereas with a sewer, everybody else's poop has the opportunity to come into your house.
Yeah.
Which you don't, you didn't want.
Don't want that. Another interesting point is I've been talking exclusively about people, inventors and engineers in the UK. Now, when settlers came over to America, they did not come over with plans for toilets. And so the toilet actually had a parallel evolution in the UK and in the United States.
So it evolved in isolation, basically.
A little bit, yeah.
That's neat.
With a little bit. I mean, they obviously had some common history there, but it was largely engineers in the U.S. who created very similar style toilets. In some cases, they were toilets that were lagging behind the technology by about 20 years compared to the U.K., but you had folks like James T. Henry and William Campbell who were awarded a U.S. patent for a water closet, toilet. And that's where we really see it moving forward from that point on, and to the point where they essentially merged. Like we saw the United States adopt things like the S-trap, making the toilets more useful.
Right.
Do you know when toilet paper was invented?
Toilet paper was invented in 1978.
I predate 1978, and I distinctly remember toilet paper. You were off by almost 100 years. 1890 is when toilet paper was invented.
Didn't they used to use a Sears Roebuck catalog as toilet paper in the U.S.?
Or a corn cob.
Yeah.
There's actually some poetry that I've read where there's a discussion. A giant, I forget what poem it is, but there's a giant talking about all the different things he has used to clean himself after evacuation, including, I think he determined that the most comfortable was the neck of a goose.
Oh, that is nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can tell you.
Not for the goose, but.
No.
Yeah. So yeah, toilet paper was invented in 1890, but not marketed heavily until 1902.
Huh.
So for more than a decade.
Yeah.
It just kind of, I was like, well, I mean, why? We got the Sears Roebuck catalog.
Or corn cobs. How do you look around your house and say, oh, yeah, corn cob, that's a good idea.
It's not a bad idea. Yeah,
sure, it's got traction, but you pay a price for that traction.
Yeah, I hesitate to hazard a guess, to be honest.
I like the gooseneck idea. I might try that. I have some geese at home.
All right. Okay, well, I'd like to apologize on behalf of Josh's geese here. I'm sorry, guys. I'd like to extend to you my apologies for giving him the idea. Let's talk about how a toilet actually works.
Okay.
All right. So you got your basic parts of the toilet. You've got the tank. You've got the bowl.
Right.
In which you do your business.
Yeah.
And then you have the siphon, the S-trap area, that where the waste goes once you flush.
Which is technically part of the bowl.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just, it's easier to talk about it as separate parts, but yes, you are correct.
Thank you.
So inside the tank, you have the flush valve, Mm-hmm. This is the valve that allows water to flow out of the tank and into the bowl.
Yeah, so when you press down the handle,
yep.
There's that handle is connected by chain to that flush valve. That's
right.
The thing that lifts up and lets the water from the tank into the bowl.
Yeah, and once the water is flowing down, like for most toilets, you no longer have to hold the handle down because just the water itself, once the valve is in open position, it'll remain open until the water level is low enough for it to close again.
Yeah, they make it so it's light enough to float.
Yeah, once it's open.
Right, because it's overcome suction thanks
yep.
to the handle.
Mm-hmm.
And it's floating there, and then as the water drains out, its ability to float stops, so it falls back into place.
Right.
Ideally.
Ideally, yeah. There are times, obviously, if you have issues where maybe there's a hinge that's a little too tight or there's something off with the seal on the valve that you may have to have that replaced because otherwise water just continuously flows into the bowl
right.
and it never accumulates in the tank.
I found that most of the time it's because there's a little bit of extra chain that's keeping the flush valve from sitting in suction from generating.
Gotcha. You also have a second valve inside the tank.
Yeah.
The filler valve.
Right.
The filler valve is what allows water to go into the tank, as well as into the bowl after a flush.
Mm-hmm.
So it refills the tank after you flushed it. So you flush the tank, the water from the filler valve will start to pour into the tank to refill it once that flush valve has shut.
Mm-hmm.
Some of that water also will go into the bowl to bring the level back up to the proper height.
Right.
And then you've got a filler float. This is a
pretty ingenious.
Yeah, this is a brilliant idea. The idea is that the filler float will rise to a certain level within the tank, and once it's at the proper level, it will activate a switch that mm-hmm. turns off the filler valve.
Yeah.
So that way you no longer have water running in your tank. If you ever hear water continuously running in your tank, that means that float is not activating the switch properly, and you may need to take the lid off and see what's going on with that float.
Yeah.
Maybe it's stuck on something, or it's the switch might be burnt out, in which case you would need to have that switch replaced. But that's what's causing that.
Or this, again, the flush valve could be not seated properly and water's just rushing out. So
that's
that
true.
Filler valve balloon isn't getting to that level where it's supposed to, where it can trip the filler valve from turning off again.
Right, exactly. Yeah, that could be another cause for it.
But you don't have to fear, because even if the water is running,
yeah.
your toilet will very likely not overflow because it's been designed so that as the tank fills, even if it keeps filling and filling and filling, it's going to the overflow tube, I guess,
yeah.
is going to direct that into the bowl.
Right. So any water that comes above the height of the overflow tube will just flow down the tube.
Mm-hmm.
The tube leads to the bowl. And water will flow into the bowl. And then you think, wait,
right.
won't that cause it to flush?
Yeah, surely somewhere this thing's got to flood. What's the deal? Why doesn't it?
All right, that's when we get into the siphon.
Where my head pops.
Yeah, the siphon gets a little, for those of us who are many years away from basic physics,
mm-hmm.
the siphon gets confusing. So the siphon is designed, so this is that sort of upside down U or the S-shaped
mm-hmm.
pipe. The top of that upside down U, the peak there, that's at the same level as what the toilet bowl, the level of water in your toilet bowl will
mm-hmm.
be. Now, if you were to pour more water into the toilet bowl, because there's just this open area between the siphon and the bowl, you know, putting more water in makes the water level rise on both sides, right?
Right.
But if you're only putting in a little bit of water, that water will just rise up above the level of the bend
right.
and flow down the other side of the bend.
Yeah, and I want to point out that this is your explanation is spot on, but would be exponentially easier if somebody were looking at a cross section of a toilet flushing S valve right
exactly.
now.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah.
It would really drive it home a
yeah,
lot.
Yeah, cuz this is me trying to paint a picture
right.
of a toilet flush in words.
Yeah, with physics.
yeah. So you've got this level here, and as long as the water is just flowing gently, so it, in other words, like a steady stream from the overflow tube,
mm-hmm.
then it's just going to gradually rise up till it hits above that U bend, and then flow down the other side, and that's all that happens because it's not creating the siphon effect yet.
Yes. So the water is in that in that S trap
yep.
and in your toilet bowl.
Yep.
And on the other side of the siphon in the tube that leads down to the sewer,
yep.
that air is in balance with the air that's in the toilet bowl.
Right.
So you basically have air pressure balancing your water
yep.
and keeping it in place.
Yep, yep. And it's only if you were to fill that siphon, that mm-hmm. S trap, with water completely.
Yep.
That then things get out of balance. And here's where the siphon effect comes into play. So how does a siphon work? All right. First of all, a siphon's a bent tube used to move a liquid from a high elevation, over an obstruction and to a lower elevation.
Done and done.
Right. You could do this very easily by taking two cups, filling one cup with water, putting a couple books down on a table.
Mm-hmm.
So you put the cup full of water on top of one of the set of books, get a tube, like a flexible tube of some sort,
right.
submerge it in the water so that the tube fills with water, put your thumb over one end of it,
right.
move it over to the other cup, which is on the surface of the table.
Yeah. It's lower.
Yeah. Make sure that the end of the tube that you're holding ends up being lower than the level of water in the cup.
Mm-hmm.
Let go. Water will start to flow from the cup that's above to the cup that's below, even though the tube will arc. So the water is technically flowing uphill.
Yeah, which is pretty neat.
Yeah.
As long as the lower end of the tube going into the lower elevation glass,
yeah.
As long as that is exposed to air, and as long as the end of the tube that's in the higher glass is underwater, the air pressure in the tube is overcome and the suction effect takes place, right?
Well, kind of, except that the tube in the lower elevation does not have to be above water. It can actually be completely submerged as well. What will happen is if the two water levels reach the same height,
mm-hmm.
And I mean same height relative to the table, then pressure is equalized and everything's in equilibrium and water will stop to flow.
Gotcha.
But as long as the elevated cup has a higher water level, water will continue to flow through that siphon. And the reason, there are two reasons really. One is that water inside a chamber like that acts like a chain. It pulls itself along.
Right.
The other reason is that you have, think of the tube as an arc. Well, the tube that leads down to the lower elevation is longer. That side is longer than the side that's in the higher elevation.
Mm-hmm.
So the water that's in that part is heavier.
Right, okay.
And that weight is what's pulling water along inside the tube, and it's until you hit equilibrium. So for a toilet, to get it back to the toilet example and why it's important, when you flush, that water from the tank rushes into the bowl, and it does so fast enough to completely fill the pipe in
right.
that S-trap. This activates the siphon effect,
mm-hmm.
and the water pulls the waste and also all the rest of the water along with it through that S trap until it gets to a point where it has exhausted the amount of water that the tank has put into the bowl.
Mm-hmm.
And then air is introduced. And once air is introduced, the siphon effect stops.
Right. So with a siphon, not only is the water flowing out of the bowl, because there's so much water, what about 2 or so gallons
yeah.
introduced to your toilet bowl in about 3 seconds that siphon effect is produced in the S trap, right?
Yeah.
Not only is that water flowing, it produces a type of suction. So the water in the bowl is sucked out
yep.
and down the siphon. And then, yes, when, like you said, once the air is introduced because the water and everything sucked out of the toilet bowl, the suction effect is cut off and everything goes back to the way it was before you flushed the toilet.
Right. That's when the filler valve can start to refill the bowl, because now that there's no longer any more suction going on,
yeah.
the bowl water level can return back to what it was as well. And keep in mind that part of the S trap that, you know, you can't see because it's a solid pipe,
mm-hmm.
but that also ends up filling to that same height as the water that's in the bowl.
Right.
And then you're ready to go again once the tank is full anyway.
Yeah, you eat some kimchi.
We talked about that before the podcast started. But yeah, one other thing to keep in mind, you might say, well, why do we need a tank at all? Why not just have a water pipe going directly into the toilet, and then when you flush, it just opens up a valve for a certain amount of time and then closes? And the reason is because unless you have insane water pressure in your house,
right.
you're not putting enough water in fast enough to fill that S trap completely
right.
to to activate the siphon effect.
It's just going to trickle out like if your tank was overflowing.
Exactly.
Slightly.
So there's some buildings that, I mean, a lot of buildings that don't have tanks on their toilets, but that's because, again, they are directly connected to a very powerful water system. And thus, you don't need a tank because the water pressure that's coming in is great enough to start that effect all by itself.
Just whoosh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or sometimes it's even a more terrifying noise than that. So that's your basic toilet, how your basic toilet works. But
I'm so glad we're past the siphon effect.
Yeah, that's...
I feel like we just made it through the woods together.
Now we're going to go into the bright, gorgeous future of weird toilets.
This is great.
So let's talk Japanese toilets for a second. And I'm not talking about the ones, the trough ones, which we established there are still some in Japan.
And trough is one way to put it. More like elliptical hole in the ground is another way you could describe it as well. Like on the floor.
Yeah.
Squatting toilet, I think.
Yeah, so you straddle and then squat and then evacuate. and then evacuate. Right. Evacuate the area. Like, I would just be like, I don't know if I did it right, and run down the street. That would be me. Like, I can't read your language and I'm so sorry. just make a good run for it.
This can't be right.
Yeah, that's kind of how I'd probably react. I mean, I'm being honest here. But no, the Japanese toilets, the more Western style ones, have features, many of them have features on them that put our Western toilets to shame. Like, just phenomenal.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cb for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI. And Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI and revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So let's talk about some of the features that you can find in Japanese toilets. All right, do you have a favorite out of all of them?
The air dry thing.
Air dry.
That's pretty amazing.
I'm big on the sound masking.
Yeah, they offer, most Japanese toilets that have all the bells and whistles offer a sound masking feature that's a flushing toilet.
Yeah. Some of them now have also classical music, but which mixed sense. With some white noise.
Yeah.
I actually did a Brain Stuff episode about what white noise is and how it works. So you should check that out.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Curious. But yeah, it's the, that, those are so, two of the very simple ones, but it also tends to have a couple different, options for washing your nether regions once you are finished.
Yes. And depending on your gender, you should, well, I should say depending on your sex, you should be very careful what option you choose when you're in Japan.
Yeah. Bidet would be aimed, for, you know, ladies.
Right. And not then, for the men folk.
And then you have rear washing, which is for, you know, everyone, depending upon what activities you got up to.
Yeah.
On that bathroom.
Right.
So there's usually there's a picture of like a icon that looks kind of like a butt.
Right.
With some sort of stream of something directed at it. That would be for washing your rear.
Yep.
The bidet usually has a icon of a lady somewhere on it.
Like there's a ponytail involved.
Yeah, something like that to indicate what that was for. And if you're wondering, like, well, wait a minute, this sounds like this could be really unhygienic. The Japanese are very concerned with cleanliness.
Oh, yes.
And so these are nozzles that are usually hidden away from the inside of the toilet bowl. It's only when you press the button that they get, there's like essentially a door that opens and the mm-hmm. nozzle can come out. And they have nozzle sterilization technology to clean them between uses.
Right.
And so, they usually have buttons where you also have to, like a stop button. So if you press one of these, it essentially goes until you tell it to stop.
Yeah. And the person who wrote this, this how to use a Japanese toilet post, points out that before you choose either of these options, you want to press the stream power down as low as it'll go to start. And then you can adjust it upwards. He or she says that at the normal setting is equivalent to about a water pick.
Yeah.
Which on your junk, that's not good.
Yeah.
That's terrible.
It might come as a big surprise, for that to hit certain sensitive areas.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Setting it low. And some of them also have controls for the temperature of the water.
Yeah.
Not to mention the temperature of the seat. Some also, like you mentioned, have the air drying so that after you have had your rear washed, you can air dry it.
Which, I mean, like, yes, that's cool. There's like bidets and rear washing and all that stuff, but you're not going to stand up right afterward and just be wet. You have to have the air dryer. That's why, to me, that's the best part.
I agree. I mean, if you're going to have these other features, you really do need the air dryer, or else you're just like, well, I guess I'll be sitting here for a couple more minutes before I dare move. Another interesting thing to me about the Japanese culture, and it makes perfect sense. I totally understand it. But, you know, in Japan, shoes are really considered to be quite dirty. Those are one of the dirtiest pieces of clothing that people have. So it's customary, of course, to take your shoes off and slip into house slippers before going into a house, right?
Absolutely.
Bathrooms have their own sets of slippers.
Yeah. And it is quite a faux pas to mix the two together.
Oh, yeah. If you were to step out of a bathroom wearing bathroom slippers, you would shock people.
Especially if you did like a little dance, like, I'm American.
Oh,
I'm
American. That, don't do that, people. Come on.
And you can usually tell the bathroom slippers from they have almost like a bit of a waterproof look to them usually.
Yeah.
They're a little shinier. They're made of – they're not like cloth usually. They're,
right.
You could tell – just using your noodle compared to house slippers, you'd be like, these are probably the bathroom slippers.
And
you'd likely be right.
A lot of them even say like toilet slippers, or they might be brightly colored and you think no one would ever wear these anywhere else.
Yeah. Or so, maybe they have a poop emoji on them.
It could be. Those are popular. Another feature you might find on the toilets is a deodorizer button.
Yeah.
Also kind of interesting.
So I found a toilet, if I may give a plug, even though I should say I have no financial interest whatsoever in the Kohler company, but I have become a fan of their Numi toilet.
Oh, yeah?
I can't even begin to describe it. It's just so neat as far as the design goes. Just look for the Numi toilet, N-U-M-I. But one of the things they have is a deodorizer. It's like basically a little vent where the odor is sucked in and run through a charcoal filter.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, When I read about the Japanese toilets, obviously there's some humor that comes in that just from the cultural differences, things like that, mm-hmm. and which can seem very funny. But at the same time, I am incredibly envious. I would love to have a lot of these features built into American toilets. There are some moves to improve toilet technology in various ways. Some of it is conservation, trying to find low flush toilets
right.
you know, that'll still activate the siphoning technique, but not use as much water in a go. Very important.
Did you see the Nomex toilet?
I did. Yeah, the one that is meant. It has kind of like a ledge mm-hmm. and filter for urine.
Yes.
And then behind that would be where
your poop goes.
Poop goes. Yeah. It's meant so that when you just have to urinate, you don't have to flush the toilet.
It doesn't flush at all. And as a matter of fact, it collects the urine.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons why the company that originally started making Nomex toilets stopped making them is because, well, number one, they didn't catch on very well. There was a lot of hesitancy.
Yeah.
But another reason is they didn't quite have the infrastructure to collect the urine separately
right.
and send it off. Although, environmentally speaking, it makes a lot of sense to
sure.
separate urine from feces, especially and not flush urine.
Yeah.
Because when you flush urine, you're introducing a lot of other stuff besides just the urine. Like if you are on pharmaceuticals.
Sure.
A lot of that stuff is expelled and metabolized and expelled in your urine, and it gets introduced into wetland areas and things like that. And all of a sudden you have frogs that are like have roid rage or something. you know? Or that, like, are rubbing themselves against walls because you took too much ecstasy the night before.
That's fair. Yeah, I mean, well, yeah, anything you're taking in to your, anything you're going to excrete has been filtered through your kidneys. You're going to have some other elements in there, too.
Right, right.
That you've consumed.
But so the Nomex toilet collects this urine and sends it off for separate recycling. And then if you're really hardcore, you know, granola, or your city is, then maybe it gets recycled into water and you drink that and pee it out again and again, and it becomes a closed loop.
Yeah, and we've talked about that on Forward Thinking. We talked about that with systems aboard the International Space Station, ways of water reclamation. So that, I mean, obviously, if you are in an area where you get very little water or it's very difficult to ship water to you, you have to make the best use of all the resources you have.
Yeah.
There's some other things we can talk about as far as toilet advances. Smart toilets.
Yeah.
So sensor technology has gotten to the point now where it's very inexpensive. It's versatile.
Waterproof.
It's entirely possible to design sensors that could measure your waste and come up with actual information that could be relevant to your health. So I saw some interesting examples, like the idea of a sensor that could be an early pregnancy detection by detecting changing hormone levels.
Yes.
It might analyze your waste, detect a bacterial infection. So it might tell you, it might even send you an indication saying, you know, you need to take it easy for a little while, or maybe even you need to go see a doctor.
Right.
With the right kind of software, and this is not hard to do at all. You could even have one that could send a notification to your doctor, or even go further, have one that's linked to your doctor's calendar and mm-hmm. your calendar, and even create an appointment for you.
Right.
So your toilet does all that for you. It's possible. It's not something that we're necessarily seeing everywhere, but it is possible. I could see some problems with this, though.
Well, yeah. I mean, like, first of all, there's a real hesitancy by people to especially put their medical records out there, their
sure.
health data. I feel like though, as the advantages or the benefits of allowing the Internet of Things or that level of tech into our lives, especially with health, become obvious to more people, the more just relaxed everybody's going to become. I mean, think about it. 5, 10 years ago, say 5. The putting your credit card into a website to order something was still like really sketchy to a lot of people.
Yeah.
And now enough people have done it that it's just whatever.
That's the norm.
Right. And I think our health information is going to go that same way.
I can see that. The only thing I see as a possible, well, not the only thing, but one of the things I see as an impediment to this is how do you identify the person who is using the toilet in any given situation? So, for example, Josh, let's say I have you over.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to use my restroom.
Right.
And unbeknownst to me, you are carrying around a really awful bacterial infection that's poised to wreak havoc in your system. And so as you use my restroom and you flush the toilet, it analyzes it and suddenly thinks that Jonathan has gotten really sick. Next thing I know, my doctor's calling me. Now I know about your health condition.
Yeah, that's a very good point.
Yeah.
I would guess then if toilets are analyzing us, our health personally,
yeah,
then a toilet itself will become a much more personal thing.
So maybe I have a dumb toilet,
yeah,
as my guest toilet.
Right.
And then my smart toilet is the only one that's in my master bathroom.
Yes.
Or here's another thing. Stop me if I sound crazy.
Okay. Stop.
You got a biometric authentication system for your toilet where you have to scan like a thumbprint or a retinal scan to identify you before using it. Thus, you can't possibly confuse two people, and you cannot flush until you have identified yourself.
No, that's a good one. I mean, it makes sense. My wife and I have an Aria scale.
Mm. Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right, it's like Fitbit. And it can easily tell us apart,
mm-hmm.
but because I mean, it just determines like weight and all that stuff.
Sure.
So it can easily tell us apart, but you know, maybe the seat does detect by weight, or there is some other detail about you that just by sitting on the toilet, it says, this is Jonathan or this is not Jonathan.
Like this is someone who's broken into Jonathan's house to use his toilet.
Right. Well, that would be another thing.
Then you get an app. Yeah, someone's using your bathroom. Should I lock the door? Yes.
And turn on bathroom webcam.
Right. Yeah, there you go. And also the, deodorize. Let's just go ahead and be safe. So there are other potential dangers, and one of those is hacking.
Yeah.
So there's already a story about a smart toilet hacking situation, which happened back in 2013. Ars Technica reported that according to security firm Trustwave, the Inaxsatis automatic toilet had a Bluetooth security vulnerability, and it was a doozy,
mm-hmm.
so to speak. So the, you know, when you pair two Bluetooth capable technologies together, you generally have some sort of code that you have to put in,
right,
in order to pair them. Not always, but a lot of them do. And the problem was they had hardwired the same master code in all of these toilets, and it was just 0000.
Right. So any app for this toilet could pair with any toilet just from being in the same area.
Right. So if you are within Bluetooth distance, which is pretty decent, mm-hmm. I mean, it's not that far, but it's not, you know, it's not like you could do it from 250 feet away necessarily. But if you're close enough, like within the building or on the side of it or whatever, you could totally pair your phone with a toilet inside,
mm-hmm.
and essentially hijack someone's toilet, which, you know, you might think, well, what could you do? Well, this thing had the ability to open and close via a command on your phone, so that way you didn't have to touch the toilet seat.
Right.
It also allowed you to control things like the bidet or the rear washing nozzles. So you could turn it on. Like, you could turn on one of those nozzles when no one's on the toilet and start flooding their bathroom.
Yes.
Or you could do it when you realize someone's just gone into the bathroom and they haven't even really started yet. You could do it then and just laugh at the hilarious results.
Ruin their day.
Or close the toilet seat while they're mid, activity.
You know, it's ironic about using an app on your phone to open and close the toilet seat.
Would it be that the phone surface is the dirtiest surface you come in contact with?
Vastly dirtier than your toilet. Yeah.
I thought that might be where you were going with that. Yeah. Guys, if you didn't know, if you have a smartphone that's got a touchscreen, it's filthy.
It's about the dirtiest thing you probably come into contact with in any day, including a toilet seat.
Yeah. Yeah. The one thing that might be a good competitor with that would be a keyboard. If you use a keyboard on a daily basis, that's probably pretty gross too.
Yeah.
So what's in the future for toilets? Probably we will see some more of these things that are common now in Japanese toilets kind of filter their way through to mm-hmm. other ones. I imagine we'll see more moves to conserve water. It may even mean that we end up moving away from the siphon model and find a different model to deal with waste so that it's not reliant upon creating enough water to create this suction.
Mm-hmm.
We'll have to wait and see. But we have to thank the brilliant men and women who came before us, forging the path to make this incredibly useful piece of technology.
Yeah.
And also hope that we can continue to strive to get it to more people so that we can improve the quality of life for folks who otherwise are in pretty rough, circumstances.
Indeed.
When cultures are going to adopt it.
Right.
So, Josh, thank you so much for joining me on this
episode. Thank you for having me. This was a joy.
It was fun. It was fun. I'm glad we were able to talk about this in a mature way with only a few terrible jokes on my end.
Relatively mature.
Yeah.
We did pretty good.
Juvenile at times, but mostly mature. Of course, listeners, you can find Josh at the Stuff You Should Know podcast, which is the granddaddy of all the stuff podcasts. Fantastic. I mean, it's the oldest podcast that's still running from How Stuff Works.
Right.
And is fantastic. It's great. And
thanks,
you can also find Josh in lots and lots of video series. One of my favorites, the Don't Be Dumb series, remains way up there. I mean, it's like consistently informative and incredibly entertaining to me.
Thanks a lot, Strick. I appreciate that.
It takes a lot of work to look that uncomfortable on camera.
What's sad is it doesn't take much at all. I'm just myself.
That's when I just stop trying.
Right. Everything else is difficult.
Nice. Yeah. Well, and guys, if you have any suggestions for future episodes of Tech Stuff, whether it is a type of technology, a personality, a company, maybe you have a suggestion for someone you want to hear interviewed or be a guest host, let me know. Send me a message. That email address is techstuff@howstuffworks.com, or drop me a line on Twitter or Facebook or Tumblr. The handle at all three of those is techstuff, HSW, and I'll talk to you again really soon.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cb for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.